System.
I'm Peter.
And I'm Felice.
Welcome to our travel podcast. We're specialist travel writers, and we've spent half a lifetime exploring every corner of the world.
So we want to share with you some of our extraordinary experiences and the amazing people we've met along the way.
This week, we're talking to an award-winning musician whose remarkable 3,500-mile journey across the United States sets a benchmark in the music industry this spring. Gerald B. Engelhardt composed, recorded, and almost entirely produced her new album, appropriately called The Passenger, while being just that, on a train from New York to Los Angeles.
You're a singer-songwriter, and you know about film scores and Broadway musicals, advertising jingles, and New Age mindfulness records. You're a classically trained pianist turned composer turned rock chick. How did you first start your music career?
The career is definitely different than music, the hobby and the skill, but the career definitely started after I graduated from college. I actually got a double degree in music and biology. I thought music was the hobby, biology was the career. I was getting into science. I had a job scuba diving for the government, doing water quality research. We had a little bit of time off after about 6 months of that job, and a friend of my mom's heard that I also loved music and said, hey, would you come to Rome, Italy with me? Because I got hired to create this website, like a very beautiful website for a very beautiful exclusive hotel. And we need videos and we need music for those videos. Would you come do all the video and music content creation? And I said, sure. And so I spent a month in Rome, and I kind of never looked back to the science stuff. I was like, this is where music can take me. This is very cool. So, and so I moved to New York City, and my first job was just sort of interning in a messenger in Manhattan for a commercial house that does the editing. And through them, I got to meet the music houses that put the music to those edits. Anytime I had to deliver a package to them, I'd say, do you have any job openings? Like, and I literally every single time I visited them, and this one house after like 11 months was finally like, well, we have an opening at the front desk for a week. Why don't you try that? And tried that. And then they ended up hiring me as their tech. And then I sort of moved my way up and started composing after hours, after the real composers went home, and started winning spots, like writing music for these commercials, presenting it and getting it on air. And that led to me just creating more of my own music, doing some film scores on the side, creating my own music with a band on the side. And so I left the Jingle House world to go really pursue my own career tour with the rock bands. That was, you know, I did four albums that were sort of piano, pop, rock before I got into more of the meditation New Age music, which is where I've been for the past like 5 years. So that's kind of the nutshell story.
And your new album is quite extraordinary. It's coming out in April this year, and it's very different for one extraordinary reason. You tell us about that.
I made it on a train, entirely on a train.
I mean, how can you make an album on a train? And where were you going? Was there a place you went from to, or was it several journeys?
Very good questions. When I reached out to Amtrak to let them know I was doing this, the first question was, well, you know, you can't disturb the other passengers. I think they were imagining me bringing a drum kit and a bass and a guitar and, you know, bongos and things. But the music that I was creating was ambient music, music for meditation, music for healing. The whole idea came from looking at plane tickets. I live in New York, and I wanted to go out to Los Angeles for the Grammys that were supposed to be in January of this year, and they ended up getting postponed until April because of the pandemic. But I was looking at plane tickets, and I thought they were just so expensive. And I said, this is ridiculous. I should take a train. And I kind of said it like a ha ha ha. And then I was like, what is that even? Is that a thing that people do? And I went down this rabbit hole of, oh, I've never been on a train overnight, but I've always loved trains. I toured through Switzerland and Germany exclusively on a train with my band solo like 7 times. And I love the train from where I live in the Hudson Valley to New York City, goes down along the Hudson River. It's just beautiful. And had a train set when I was a kid, like just always loved trains. So I went down this rabbit hole and realized that it's a thing you can do from New York to Los Angeles. There's several ways to get there across the country via Chicago, like through Chicago. And I did a bunch of research and learned that the route west through the Rocky Mountains was just supposed to be breathtaking. And I said, okay, let's do that. And it was 5 days out. And I thought, well, what if I try to make an album on the train? And I looked up, like, is this a thing that people do? There's a woman that about 6 years ago, she did it in over 17 days across Russia, the Russian train. There's been a country band that made an album just in train stations across America, but no one has done an album on the 5 day cross country trip. So I was like, what if I did that and tried to, you know, I work well in small spaces and with a deadline. So I went from New York to Los Angeles. The Grammys got canceled early January and I decided to keep my ticket. And that same week, my best friend passed away. And I also decided to keep the ticket. And I really just, I needed to get away. I've been in my studio for the entire pandemic, 2 years, but also was so exhausted just emotionally watching, you know, he had cancer and it was so sad to sort of watch that progression. And so I needed some healing and I was like, how can I travel, which takes so much energy, but also just literally lie down all day long and have people bring me my food? Turns out a train across the country is the ticket to see the world, see the country at 100 miles an hour, but also be able to literally lie down all day long, you know, with your computer and your headphones and have someone bring you your meals that you could order, which is extraordinary. So it was a very healing, beautiful, creative trip. I ended up halfway through that trip out. I canceled my plane ride home and decided to take a train back because I just loved it so much. The record was done by the time I arrived in LA, but I just decided that I wasn't done. There was more learning, more observing, more resting to do. So it ended up being 9 days total on the train.
Well, so writing an album in 5 days sounds very quick.
It was very quick. So I had a little teeny keyboard that I brought with me. I am a piano player, so I easily can play things into my computer. And then I have this program called Logic, and I can tell the program, okay, now I'm going to play this, but I want it to sound like a harp, or I want it to sound like a weird galaxy synthesizer or a violin. So I would always be composing on this little keyboard that was plugged into my computer, and then I had headphones on, so I wasn't disturbing anyone. Most of the composing was in my room, but I would go to the cafeteria car or the observation car, which was all glass, really beautiful, if it wasn't too crowded, and I would bring my little setup there. And the way I composed this album was very improvisatory, meaning I just kind of would put the click on, like I hear a little metronome, like tick, 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 and I would just sort of play along and play around. I played a lot with the sounds and I just let the beautiful scenery kind of inspire me. And I would wake up and I would have a little melody in my head. I had a lot of dreams of my friend. I composed mostly in my room, but I did notice that the songs I wrote, in the beginning, I didn't know what to call any of these pieces of music. They're just sort of things coming to me, sounds. So I would just name them the time of day, like Monday breakfast, you know, Sunday sunset. But I noticed that the pieces that were earlier morning, you know, Tuesday sunrise, were definitely a little more melancholy, a little more sad. I would wake up from these dreams that I had my friend that passed away was in every single one of my dreams, which is one of the reasons I wanted to stay on the train. I felt like he was kind of there. So yeah, so writing it came, it was an improv sort of, let's just see what comes out. I wasn't thinking too structurally. I played a lot with the sounds and I let the sounds kind of dictate. Okay, when I hold it down for this, it kind of does a womp, 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 womp. So I want to hold that down long enough to get to the womp at the end. So that would dictate some of the tempos. And I just kind of let things flow. I mean, the album is called The Passenger, and it was my word of the year that I picked early in January with the idea of what does it look like to stop trying to control and force things and go with the flow. And so I really wanted that to be embodied in the music. So it's a very like flowy process, and it came much more easy. I thought I would be rushing, but I got 12 songs completed. The album will have only 9 of them because I loved 9 of them and I liked the other 3, so they didn't make the cut.
So did you have a favorite bit of scenery that you went through that produced your favorite track?
Oh, that's a good question. I should go cross-reference. My favorite scenery for sure was once we got past Denver into the Rocky Mountains, headed towards Sacramento. And it didn't even feel like I was looking at scenery. It felt like I was part of the scenery, like just out the window was the Colorado River frozen. And, you know, there was a herd of about 100 elk running across this river. Like it was just every time we had what they called a smoking break or a fresh air break, which just is ironic to me. One of them is ironic. I would get out and I would bring wet paper towels and I would just wash my window so that I could just take really beautiful photos. And, you know, because they get dirty and they get streaked with, you know, moisture and whatnot. And so many people were like, well, come do mine. And are you getting paid for that? But I was like the person on the California Zephyr that was cleaning her windows every time we stopped.
So did you have your own carriage, your own room?
Yeah. You could have been in coach seats, which I can't sleep even on planes unless I'm completely horizontal. I'm just one of those people. So red eyes are like my nightmare. But then they also had roomettes. They called them roomettes. And it's kind of like, you know, if you've seen a Harry Potter movie, the car where you step into the door and then there's two seats facing each other. And an attendant would come in at night and put the seats down and it turns into a bed. And there's all this lovely bedding. And then there's also a bunk that folds down. So you could technically have two people in there. I think two people would have been extremely tight. But I ended up having those seats made and I kept the bunk up and I just used the like a bed, like you would work in bed, like sitting up. And I didn't bother the attendant to come in and turn it back into seats because I could just go sit in the observation car. They also had bedrooms, which are definitely bigger. I saw a family of four in one of the bedrooms, but I did the smaller of the rooms, the roomette, and it locks from the inside. You have your own little plugs and lights, and anyone that's in a sleeper car, which is what they called those roomettes in the bedrooms, got meals. Complimentary meals with your ticket. So you could go up to the dining car. The dining car got a little crowded on a couple legs and, you know, everyone's got their masks off. So I was uncomfortable. So, but they allowed, because of COVID, you could tell the attendant in the morning the meals orders that you want and they would just bring them to you at their convenience, which was super great. So you had a couple options there if you were staying in a room.
Did you talk to your fellow passengers much, or they must have thought you were kind of strange hermit? Hidden away.
I definitely kept to myself. Some of the reading and research I had done is that it's such a great trip to get to know so many different people with different destinations. And I really didn't feel like that was the purpose for me. I am a very like friendly. I love to meet people on travels and like hear about what other people are doing. But for this trip, I really was barely keeping it together emotionally. It was only 2 weeks after my best friend had passed away. And so I was really there to kind of do some internal reflection and let out whatever was going to come out creatively. I also knew that I didn't have a ton of time to do this if I wanted to create this album. So it was, I didn't really feel like I had time to spare, especially if I felt like writing. I wanted to go with that inspiration. So I talked to my attendant. I sort of, you know, they had different attendants, people that were, you know, in charge of the sleeper car at any given time. And I was curious about how the whole system works and found out some things. But I did really keep to myself. I had headphones on a lot. I did ask someone to take a video of me composing, and she was really great and curious, and she shared a little bit about what she was doing. So, but yeah, I didn't really talk to a lot of people. That wasn't sort of the energy I was feeling. And also with COVID and everyone's kind of just, you know, when you're unmasked, it's mostly because you're eating and trying to get in and out. And so there was that kind of energy going on. It was right after the big peak as well, after the holidays, because I started the trip January 22nd. So it was not, we hadn't, you know, all the mask mandates were still there, and especially on the train, which I think they still are. So yeah, kept to myself.
I've never done it by train, but it's a very long way from one coast to the other. I hitchhiked it when I was a teenager many, many years ago.
Wow.
And that seemed like a very long way then.
Yeah.
Were you conscious of how far it is and what a different place Los Angeles is compared to New York City?
Yeah. I mean, I was tracking, and I had a page that I created on my website that my fans could track where I was. It was like a real-time update train app thing that you can see where along the journey you were. And so I was following that as well to sort of see, you know, delay. I mean, I didn't care about delays because I was like, well, when the train gets there, the train gets there. Delays are good for me. I have more time to write. You know, the plains are always so, like, Nebraska and Kansas and that whole, like, the Midwest is just such a vast, different space is just different there. And I mean, Los Angeles is, my sister lives there. I've stayed in Los Angeles for months at a time. I know the city very, very well. So arriving there felt like, you know, coming to my second home a little bit. But yeah, the country is really, it's really amazing to be able to travel inside of the country and not have to deal with international anything and still get such a variety of landscape, cities and towns and the mountains and the plains and all of the things that are in the songs and all that.
So this is an instrumental album, no singing. Obviously, you couldn't have Probably couldn't have sung on the
plane. I did bring this little microphone. I have this great travel microphone, you know, in case I was inspired by the sounds of the train. And I wasn't. It was just very noisy. I was not inspired by the sounds of the train. I love to take source sounds. Like, I'll pluck on the piano. My last record had a lot of John Cage type of composition techniques. And I didn't take the microphone out the whole time. I was able to collaborate with a few really amazing instrumentalists, one of whom is a Grammy-winning artist, Lily Hayden, and she's a violinist, but she also is a beautiful vocalist. And so when I sent her sort of the bass track, and I said, hey, do you have any ideas you want to put on this? While I was still on the train, I was emailing, you know, at the stops when the Wi-Fi was decent, would email her the MP3, and she said, yeah, and I also think I could do a little vocal thing that might help the violin on this. So there technically is a vocal on it. It's not mine, and it was not recorded on the train, but it was produced while still on the train, and that's from Lily. But yeah, there's no lyrics. I can't say that there are no vocals on the record, but it is definitely, I would call it an instrumental record. I would call it ambient, and new age is really the genre that it's been hanging out in. It's been available for pre-orders, and within 18 hours it hit number one on Amazon as a bestseller new age album, which just blew my mind. So there are people that want to listen to this kind of music, which is great. So
amazing. Can you explain for our listeners that don't know, what is new age records?
The very like most known new age artist that you might have heard of is Enya. And Enya does vocals and a lot of just like ethereal music. There's a lot of healing music and meditation music inside of the new age genre. Ambient music and electronic music can also be found inside new age. New age is sort of like the overarching genre of piano solo music that's not necessarily classical. There's a lot of crossover things that could be considered new age. It tends to be, the music is really about the process and the intention behind the music. Usually there's some sort of finding peace or healing intention in the music. So it feels a little, sometimes it can feel a little woo-woo. But I think it is, it's music that is a little bit softer. You'll find a lot of new age music on like focus playlists and sleep playlists and meditation playlists or stations, if you listen to any of those. That generally can be considered new age music. I don't know if that helps define the genre a little bit. Yeah.
Which instruments do you play apart from the piano?
Yeah, piano is definitely my main instrument. And I use normally in recordings other than this one, I use vocals a lot. I use the vocals as an instrument. And I'll do weird things in the production and the mixing electronically. I do play, you can see a tiny little ukulele here, and I love different percussion things. But my main instrument and sort of mode of composing is definitely the piano.
So, I mean, it sounds to me like you actually not only wrote the album and recorded it, but you produced the whole album virtually on the train.
I did. The only thing I didn't do on the train, which is, was mix it. And mixing is slightly different than producing. So composing is coming up with the actual musical content. And yes, I did that all on the train. And because I was creating an electronic album, I was producing it as I was composing it. Sometimes a songwriter will write a song and then bring it to a producer, and the producer will say, okay, it needs guitar here, and then it needs a banjo here, and it needs a harmonica here. And that's producing it. It's taking the actual melody of the song and turning it into the track. So I was doing those two things simultaneously. I was composing and producing at the same time, working with the collaborators, saying, here's what I'm looking for you to do. Here's the sheet music for this. And then they would send their tracks back and I would work it into what I had created. That's me also producing. Mixing is when it comes time to really say, okay, how does this sound? Does the piano need to come out a little bit louder than the bass here? Does this synthesizer, is there like an annoying tone that we need to sort of tone down? And I needed to do that not on the train, because on the train there's a lot of low rumble. Like, when I say low, I mean frequency versus like a high pitch bird, right? So it was hard for me to tell, okay, I'm playing a synthesizer. I couldn't tell if the low rumble I was hearing was part of the synthesizer sound or if it was the train. So I needed to do the mixing in my studio where I could really hear all of the frequencies and know that it wasn't, you know, when I got back to my studio, I was like, oh, I thought that song had a lot more bass in it, but I guess I was just train rumbling that I was hearing. So I mixed it and then I sent it to Kim Rosen at NAC Mastering. And mastering is the final step. And that's really getting each track on the album to sound sort of the same volume and prepare it for streaming services like Spotify and Apple and Amazon so that it's the same volume as the tracks that are on those platforms. So that's what mastering is. So mixing and mastering happened afterwards, but the composing and production and the recording essentially all happened while on the train.
Have you traveled a lot for your career?
I have. I know a lot of musicians that have traveled a lot more than I have, and I know a lot of people that have traveled a lot less. So I'm not someone who has the travel bug. Like, I don't feel like I really need to get out and try. I am such a homebody, but music has taken me to really cool places, and I have started to see myself as a traveler, and I can navigate train stations and airports and flights and using points, and like I've become good at traveling. So I think I have to say yes to that question.
And you've toured with your band?
I have, yep. About 6 years. I think we stopped about when I sort of shifted from touring and doing the pop stuff with them. I got a couple film scores, feature films, which really are hard to do from the road. You need to be sitting in with a monitor and watching the film and composing. So when I started getting into feature film scores, that had me say, okay, let's like pause with the touring on the road. And then I just kind of stuck around and became more of a writer. I started working with choirs, and then this meditation music and new age music really started to call to me, and it's not really band music. So.
So what was the band called? Will the band be known in Europe as well as America?
Just my name, Cheryl B. Englehart.
And how many albums have you written so far?
The Passenger is the 7th. Yep. The first 4 were the singer-songwriter pop, all lyrics, me singing and playing with the band. And then my first New Age album was Luminary, and it was written on a tiny little mountain town in Greece. It was a composer residency, and it was this beautiful little stone room with a piano in it. And I said, okay, I have 2 weeks, and I'm going to make a piano album. And it was the first of this sort of New Age genre with no words, no singing. I did sing on it, but again, just sort of as an instrument, using my voice, doing lots of high ahs and things. And that album, without really thinking, I thought it was just sort of a project for me. And I put it out, and it was the first one of my albums after trying so hard with my pop music. It was the first one to get on sales charts and radio stations and all these things, you know, inside of that genre. And I said, oh, maybe this is a space I should explore. And so then I did a second one, which was my 6th album last year. And then this kind of, I wasn't planning on doing another album this year, but this train trip kind of just said, yeah, let's just do it. So 7th.
So what next?
Oh, goodness. Well, the album hasn't even come out yet. So, I mean, whew, what next? When the album comes out, I've got sort of a big goal to see if I can't get on the Billboard charts for New Age, which is very hard if you don't have a record label doing things for you. But I've been told by a little insider birdie that I've been close in the past. So I thought this could be a fun album to try. Always going for a Grammy nomination. It's always worth the try to see, okay, am I creating something at that level? But I've got I do a lot of work with social justice choirs. So I've got a few commissions that I'll be working on later in the year. My friend that passed away, Kevin Archambault, he and I wrote a Broadway musical. And before he passed away, we worked on editing that. It had been up, you know, we produced it. And so we have some feedback. So I have some marching orders to continue working on that. It's called Boiler Room Girls. It's about a Kennedy conspiracy from the 60s. So I am going to be working on that with him, giving me some divine, whatever he gives me from the heavens. So that's definitely on the docket for this year as well.
How does your job fit in with your husband's job?
He's a mountain guide.
It does not at all. I definitely need a lot of space when I'm in creative mode, and it works that I married a mountain guide who travels a lot. He follows the weather. So in the winters, he has to go where there's ice in order to ice climb and ski. And, you know, he's home in the falls and the springs. And in the summers, he, when there's not a pandemic, travels to places like Mont Blanc or the Tetons. So we get some time together, and then we go off and do our path. I think it's one of the reasons why we do work is he's got this passion called the mountains, and I've got this passion called the music. And we understand, I have gone rock climbing. He used to play the trumpet in high school. So I think we both know about 5% of what the other person does, which is probably enough to just get it and then say, okay, cool, have fun. So it works.
Do you ever travel with him?
Yeah, I've definitely. I mean, the places he goes are some of the most beautiful places in the world. He used to work summers in the Grand Tetons in Wyoming, and I would go there and sort of camp out a little bit. Chamonix in France, which is at the you know, little town that's at the base of Mont Blanc. I would go there and basically sing the beginning of Beauty and the Beast. Little town full of little people, you know, with the little baguettes and, you know, the books everywhere. And I'm like, how can you not be singing this song every single day when you're in this town? So I do love traveling with him there. My work brings me to cities like Nashville and Atlanta and Austin, and he hates cities. So he rarely travels with me. but I feel like I get the good end of that stick.
So Jackson Hole, you obviously go to Jackson Hole. He goes to Jackson Hole, yep.
Yeah, that's one of our favorite places
in the world.
It is. It's pretty special, yeah.
What sort of music do you listen to yourself? What do you like?
I am not a big music listener, especially when I'm in creative mode. I am A, terrified that I'm going to hear something and rip it off and copy it without knowing that I'm copying it because it was in my brain. And two, when I am in composing mode or creation mode, which is a lot of the year, I need to have some space to not hear anything when I'm all day long working on creating my own sounds. So my husband laughs. He's like, you're like the weirdest musician who doesn't listen to music. But I am a fan of, you know, right now I'm really trying to learn the ambient music electronic space as I loved writing this record. And I know it was a little bit different than just a typical new age album. It did sort of go into the ambient space. So I've been listening to a lot of ambient music and it's very nuanced. So it takes a close listen to just realize that it's not just sleep music. So that's been really interesting for me. I love my pop music. I love my Sarah Bareilles and, you know, I love the, you know, Goo Goo Dolls and some rock music from the early 2000s, you know, my college days. So I kind of go back to that sometimes, but I love Imogen Heap and I do listen to Enya and, but yeah, I don't often have music on. Every once in a while, I'll put my dad's old records on. He loved Dave Brubeck. So I'll have a Dave Brubeck album, Take Five, playing.
Do you come from a musical family? Do your parents?
My dad was very musical. He was an engineer, but he was one of those people that could sit down at the piano and play anything, but didn't know where middle C was. So he also played upright bass. I have his bass he passed away about 9 years ago, but he definitely passed on some love of music. It might even be the thing that we were most connecting about and connecting through.
Have you any tips for people who want to do what you do?
What do I do? I don't know. I do a lot of things. I'm one of those multi-passionate people. And I think if you're a multi-passionate person, there are a lot of things you want to do. What I've noticed in other musicians, I coach other musicians that are, you know, trying to sort of see what their career could look like, is to, and I hate this word, but it is the word that's coming to mind, is to prioritize and pick something and just do it. And it doesn't mean that you're saying, okay, if I pick this, that means I can't do these other things. It just means that you're going to do this one thing now and give it the gift of your focus and let yourself focus on this one thing and assume that if this thing does what you want it to do, it will actually elevate the other things you want to do. So I think that just starting anywhere, my dad used to say, if you don't know where to start, start in the middle, then you're that much closer to getting done. And he always said it so like flippantly. And I'm kind of like, but it makes so much sense. It's just, I mean, it really is just start. So I think that if there's any, like, I wonder if, like, I have to watch it. Because when I say, I wonder if I should take a train across the country, I wonder if I should tour in Switzerland. And then 6 months later, I find myself in the middle of Switzerland on tour. Like, it's just, you say it and then just follow the words. You know, I think that there's some trust for yourself, trusting yourself that idea is not the craziest thing in the world. And maybe it is, but give it a whirl.
If people want to listen to your music or find out more about you, where can they do that?
My website is CBE Music. So my initials, Cheryl B. Englehart, cbemusic.com. And I'm pretty much CBE Music on Instagram and Facebook. So you can find me all over the place.
Cheryl Englehart, thank you very much for appearing on the show. And we hope you have a tremendous success with Passenger when it comes out on April the 22nd, am I right?
You are right. Yes. Thank you so much. And you can get it now if you head over to Amazon or iTunes, wherever you listen to music, you can pre-order it so it shows up on that day. And that's the best way to help an independent artist. And
so can you spell your name so one can get it clear?
Yes. Cheryl is CHERYLB. And then Englehart is ENGELHART. You can search The Passenger with my name, Cheryl, and not have to spell out my whole last name, because that will show up anywhere you're searching, whether it's Amazon or iTunes or anything.
That's all for now. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our website, actionpacktravel.com. Or you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or any of the many podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love you to sign up for our regular emails too at peter@actionpacktravel.com. Until next week, stay safe.